good to see you back this evening. I guess either some of you either know how to work a VCR or don't care about football, one of the two. You know, that's why God invented VCRs, so people wouldn't have to miss church to watch anything on TV. Very useful invention, though, really. You want to turn to 2 Kings chapter 15? We'll be starting there, and we're going to move quickly because a lot of this is just the same thing over and over and over again. There are so many of these kings that were wicked kings, and just one right after another. And so we're just going to mark those little verses where that's pointed out. In chapter 15 there, verse 1, Azariah is going to be the king. Verse 3 says, he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father Amaziah had done. Now if you remember from last time, Amaziah had done right, but he had not done right like David did. And we talked about the fact that David was kind of a measuring stick, if you will, for kings. Kind of like in our country, George Washington was, he was the first president, so everybody, they compared to him. And with most of us, we compare presidents now to the first one that we remember being the president a lot of times. The group that was young at the time Kennedy was president, they compare all the presidents since then back to Kennedy. The older groups that maybe remember when maybe back Eisenhower or back to Truman or maybe back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt or, wherever, they remember that first president that they really got interested in or whatever when they first got interested in politics. And they compare everyone after that back to that first one. Well, that's the way it was with Israel, too. Saul was king before David, but David was the first one that was just really the king, and everybody got behind him, and everybody, then he was also the first one that did what God wanted done. Saul, departed from the Lord, didn't do what he wanted. So David was the first one to really go gung-ho, so he was a good example. And because of that, then all the others get compared to him. So this king, though, Azariah, did like his father Amaziah had done, which was, in other words, he did good, but he didn't do as good as David had done. Then verse 8, Zechariah, this is over in Israel now. In Israel, all of the kings get compared back to the first king after the split, and that's Jeroboam. And so all of them get compared to him. Did they do as wicked as him, or were they worse than him, or were they not as bad as him? That's kind of the comparison. There's not any of them that were good in Israel. Of the northern tribes, not a single one of the kings has ever said that he did that what was right in the sight of God. So all of them were wicked. But this one says he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, verse 9, as his fathers had done. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. And then verse 10 there, we see another thread that starts occurring in this chapter, and that is the assassination. At one point it was that the kings kind of just, it says they died, but now we start seeing assassinations. In verses 10, 14, and 25, we read about the king being assassinated. We read about people conspiring against the king to kill him and to take his place and to reign his place. We read about that in those verses. And in verse 17, we read about Menahem. Verse 18 says, he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. He departed not all his days from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. Now, of course, when it says that Jeroboam made Israel to sin, obviously, no one can make you sin physically. They can't force you to commit a sin. But he provided the way for them to commit the sin, and he certainly encouraged it and developed that false religion that so many of the others then followed after him. And so that's what it means when it says that he made Israel to sin. As the king, he obviously did have a lot more influence than just your average person as well. And so he influenced a lot of people to turn away from God to the worship of idols. Then verse 23 mentions Pekahiah, or however you want to pronounce that name. Some of these names, your guess is as good as mine as to how they're pronounced. Now, there are scholars who will say, well, I know this name should be pronounced this way. They don't know. They're just trying to guess from the combination of letters that, well, this is how it ought to be. But when you're dealing with ancient languages like that, a lot of times you don't know the exact pronunciation that they gave it. We have enough trouble with words in the English language. Is it potato or potato? You know, that's not so big anymore. I think pretty much everybody says potato now. But, you know, at one time, that was a big deal. And so the way we pronounce words, a lot of times, isn't the same even from one area of the country to another. Down here we say y'all. Out west they said, you guys. Up north in the Bronx they say you guys. and different things. So there are a lot of different pronunciations that take place. So it's hard to nail down a pronunciation of a word precisely. So we need not be nitpicky about those kinds of things. Verse 24, though, says about this Pekahiah, he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. Well, of course, one right after another. Remember, they're still getting assassinated, and this guy gets assassinated as well. Verse 27 says, Pekah begins to reign. And verse 28 says, he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. At some point there, they could just say, ditto, because all of these guys were the same. Wickedness begets wickedness a lot of times. And once wickedness begins, it's hard to get it turned back around. It's very difficult to turn it around. But here again and again, they do that. Verse 30 also, a conspiracy is made against this Pekah, and he's killed. Then verse 32, Jotham becomes king in Judah. Now we're back to Judah. So all those kings there, Azariah, remember, was king of Judah. We talked at the very beginning of the chapter. And then we had Zechariah, Shalom, Mehan, Pekahiah, and Pekah. All these guys were kings in here. And then now we get back to Judah again. And here we have Jotham then as king over Judah. And verse 34 says, he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. He did all according to all that his father Uzziah had done. Now Uzziah is also another name for Azariah. No, I take that back. I'm sorry. I'm wrong. Don't quote from that one. That's wrong. Uzziah had been king, but then Amaziah and Azariah became king in the meantime. Now Jotham becomes king, and he is the son of Uzziah, who had been the king of Judah. And he did all of the same things that Uzziah had done. In other words, he was a pretty good king, but still not like David was. In chapter 16, we read about Ahaz becomes king of Judah. Notice verse 3. Verse 3 says, but he walked in the way of the kings of Israel and made his son to pass through the fire. That in essence means that he sacrificed his son as a burnt offering to an idol. Can you imagine sacrificing your child like that? According to the abominations of the heathen whom the Lord cast out from before the children of Israel. So all these kings, they've been pretty good. And then he comes along and he follows after the kings of Israel. And he starts to do those evil things that even the people who were in the land before Israel came. He was even doing those horrible things that they had done. The whole reason they were cast out of the land and the reason Israel got the land because of that wickedness. But he comes along and does the same thing that they had been doing. Then in chapter 17, Hoshea becomes king. He's king of Israel. He is the last king of Israel. Verse 2 says, he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, but not as the kings of Israel that were before him. So, he wasn't quite as bad as some of the ones that had come before, but he still did the wrong thing. He was still evil. And verse 6 says, in the ninth year of Hoshea, The king of Assyria came and took Samaria and carried Israel away into Assyria and placed them in Hama and in Habor by the river Gozan and in the cities of Medes. And so the children of Israel, the northern tribes, get carried away into captivity by the Assyrians. And they go and become then servants and slaves to the Assyrians. And many of them lose all track of ever having been Israelites in the first place. And there is never a group return of the northern tribes like there is in the southern tribes. You know, the southern tribes are going to get carried away into Babylonian captivity a little later on. We're going to see that. The northern tribes of Israel never come back as a big group like the southern tribes, the tribes of Judah do. They come back, not all of them, of course, but many come back. But the northern tribes intermarry, and they kind of lose a lot of their distinctiveness. They lose a lot of their individuality, and they've already, years ago, lost their religion. They weren't still worshiping God, not at least like they should have been. They may have still said they were worshiping God, but they weren't really worshiping God. And so they kind of get scattered. Now, some of those from those tribes do eventually come back, but many of them had a hard time proving their lineage and proving that they actually were Jews at that later time. Verse 18 says, and explains why this event took place. Really, you kind of have to look through that whole section of all the evil things they did, but all of the things that they did, this is the conclusion, verse 18. Therefore, the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah only. So Judah was all that was left in, because the Lord was angry with these Israelites for the sinful things they had done. We need to remember that. If God could get angry at his chosen people back then and cast them out of the land, the same thing could happen to us today if we don't obey him. If we become disobedient, if we begin following false religion, the same thing's going to happen to us. He's going to cast us out of the land. And in our case, we're going to be out of the promised land of heaven. He's not going to let us come into the land. We need to be sure that we do those things that we're supposed to do. Then we come to chapter 18. Chapter 18, we read about Hezekiah. Verse 3 says, he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord according to all that David his father did. He's the first one of all this time that we've been like 1 Kings and 2 Kings. He's the first one that it says he did right. He did all the things that David did. He's the first one that's mentioned as being that good. Verse 5 talks about him. He said he trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after him was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor any that were before him. Now when it says nor any that were before him, I don't know if that's including David. I don't know if it's saying that Hezekiah trusted God more than David did even. It may be. But even if you make that exception of David, even if he's saying, well, you know, all that were before him except for David, because this is of the kings of Judah. So you could say, well, that doesn't count Saul and David and Solomon because they were kings over the whole land before the split. But all the kings, Hezekiah was the best one. All the kings of Judah. And certainly he was so far better than the kings of Israel that it's not even worth mentioning. But he's the best king out of all of the kings that Judah had. And as a result of him trusting God, we see what happens as a result of that. During the time of Hezekiah, Jerusalem prospers. The land of Judah prospers. Everything is going well because God is blessing them because they're doing what's right. Chapter 19. Then we want to look down to verse 32 and following. Notice what happens as a result of his trust. The Assyrians, remember, have just taken over the 10 tribes of the north. They're taking over all of Israel. So here's 10 tribes up here, one tribe down here. The 10 tribes up here all get taken over by the Assyrians. Well, the Assyrians then get, oh, well, Judah, that's just one tribe. Shouldn't be any problem there, right? I mean, we took over 10, that one. It'd be kind of like if somebody came in and took over all the states in the United States except Alabama, we'd be in trouble. You know, if they take over all of them, what'd make us think we could stand up? And that's the kind of arguments that the Assyrians used against them. They said, oh, and not just Israel. They had taken over lots of other countries. And they came and they said, oh, you know, those people and all their gods, they couldn't stop us. We came in and took them over. But notice what God says about Judah. Verse 32, therefore thus saith the Lord concerning the king of Assyria, he shall not come into this city, nor shoot an arrow there, nor come before it with shield, nor cast a bank against it. By the way that he came, by the same shall he return, and shall not come into this city, saith the Lord. For I will defend this city to save it, for my own sake, and for my servant David's sake. And I have to believe, for Hezekiah's sake too. Because Hezekiah is such a good king, because Hezekiah trusts in the Lord is watching out for him. And he's not going to let these things happen. Chapter 20. But notice that. See what can happen when God's on your side? One little bitty country of Judah against the whole empire of Assyria. And God said, they're not going to come here. I will defend this place. See, when God's on our side, when he's defending us because we're on his side, nobody, I don't care who it is, I don't care if it's, you know, the U.S. military, or, you know, the Saddam Hussein with chemical weapons, or the North Koreans with a nuclear bomb. It doesn't matter. Nobody can destroy if God is protecting. Now, God doesn't always stop everything from happening. He chooses sometimes to make statements like he did there, that particular king wasn't going to. That didn't mean that no king ever entered Judah and entered Jerusalem, because we're going to see later on, the Babylonians do come in, and they take over the land. But at that time, he said, no way. I'm not going to let it happen right now. Let's look then to chapter 20. Hezekiah is sick. Sick unto death. Verse 3 says, he's praying to God. He says, I beseech thee, O Lord, remember now how I have walked before thee in truth and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in thy sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. Now let me tell you, how many of us could pray to the Lord and say, remember how I have walked before you with a perfect heart? See, Hezekiah was a good guy. I mean, for him to be able to say, Lord, you know I've had a perfect heart, because the Lord knows the heart. You know, you can't fake him out. He knows. And Hezekiah says, I've had a perfect heart, and you know it, Lord. Well, because of that, verse 6, God says this, and I will add unto thy days 15 years. See, Hezekiah thought he was going to die, and he's praying, Lord, let me live a little longer. You know I've been good. He says, I will add to you 15 years, and I will deliver you and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria, and I will defend this city for mine own sake and for my servant David's sake. Now, I want you to underline that 15 years. Underline that 15 years. Because that's going to become important in just a little bit. That 15 years is so important. To chapter 21 now. Chapter 21 and verse number 1. Manasseh, this is Hezekiah's son, Manasseh was 12 years old when he began to reign, and reigned 55 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Hephzibah. Notice how old Manasseh was. He was 12 years old. Hezekiah prayed to God. God said, I'll give you 15 more years. In that 15 years, 3 years after he was sick, actually, Manasseh's born. 12 years later then, the full 15 years, Hezekiah dies, and Manasseh, at age of 12, gets to become king. Now notice what happens in verse 2. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord after the abomination of the heathen whom the Lord cast out before the children of Israel. Now we look at that, we might think, well, God, why didn't you just let Hezekiah die And somebody else could have been King Manasseh as wicked. He's the most wicked king Judah ever had. He was as wicked as Ahab, king of Israel, and we know how wicked he was. He was the most wicked king there was in Judah. And if Hezekiah had died when he was sick with it, Lord, Manasseh never would have been king. But I want us to notice something else, something more interesting. You can either mark it in the margin there next to that verse. Maybe you want to put a cross reference back to chapter 20 there and verse number 6 where God lengthens his days. But then also, we want to look over to the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 1 and verse number 10. Now the spellings are going to be a little bit different because of the difference of Hebrew and the Aramaic and Greek that Matthew was written in. But notice verse number 10. This is the genealogy of Jesus. It starts the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And then it goes on down. Abraham begat Isaac and so on and so forth. And notice verse 10. And Hezekiah, it says in the King James there in Matthew. Hezekiah begat Manasseh. Manasseh, wicked as he was in the lineage of Christ. Now this needs to be a lesson for us. We need to understand that regardless of how wicked somebody is, God can use that to his advantage. We also need to understand that regardless of how good somebody is, their children may turn out wicked. Manasseh sure did. Hezekiah was the best king Judah ever had, and yet his son was wicked. But on the other hand, Manasseh, as wicked as he was, generations down the line, here's Jesus, the only perfect one ever to exist in this world. So, it's an interesting the way that God moves throughout the Bible in his plan to bring Christ into the world. We need not think of this book as a bunch of different stories and all this. We need to remember that the whole thing is a plan and the revealing of the plan. And the whole thing from the very beginning, from the very creation, shows man's relationship to God. The way that it changes, the way that we needed God, the way that we still need God, and the way that God provides those needs, and on and on, the way that man sinned and fell from the grace of God, and then they needed a Redeemer. And so God, all through the Old Testament, is working it out and planning for that Messiah to come. Planning for Jesus to come. Things that we say, well, God, why didn't you let Hezekiah die? Well, if you let Hezekiah die and Manasseh's never born, what's that do to the line of Christ? See, time and again, Satan keeps working again, and he keeps thinking he's gained the victory. But God pulls the victory out and says, no, you can't win here, Satan. We're going to work it out another way. So time and again, these things happen. Notice verse 11 then about Manasseh. Because Manasseh king, and this is back in 2 Kings 21, sorry. Some of y'all may have still been in Matthew. But you might want to put Matthew 1 and verse 10 next to that. Because this is the line through which Jesus came. Remember, Jesus is king, right? Well, in order to be king, he had to come through the line of Judah, which was the king. He had to come through this kingly line. And so a lot of these individuals that we're reading about were Jesus' ancestors. They're his great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers. And on back. So it's interesting for us to see these people and learn about the line through which Jesus came. Because Manasseh, king of Judah, has done these abominations, verse 11 says, and has done wickedly above all that the Amorites did, which were before him, and hath made Judah also to sin with his idols. Oh, look at all the wicked things he did. So they went from Hezekiah, who was the best king they'd ever had, to Manasseh, who was the worst king they'd ever had. You know, that's the way it goes sometimes. Pendulum swing. You ever see a grandfather clock or something, and the pendulum swings back and forth? And after it's over here on the far right, if you look a second later, it's all the way over here on the far left. And back and forth. And the same thing happens with people sometimes. They swing from good to bad. Our country country. We can see in our country, you know, kind of swing back and forth. You know, there's a time when people are really bad, and then they kind of straighten up for a little while, and they'll be good a little bit, and then, you know, it'll get bad again. We see it all through history. Good and bad. Good and bad. But it seems like every time when they get bad, they get a little bit worse. And when they come back to the good, they don't get quite as far. Kind of like a ball bouncing. You ever notice when a ball bounces? You know, it hits the ground every time. But each time, it doesn't bounce back up quite as high. And then eventually, you know, it's down there at the bottom. That's what happened in Noah's world. The people just got all the way down as low as they could get. There wasn't any bounce left with anybody in the whole world except for Noah. So God saved him. Let's move on then to chapter 22. Josiah becomes king. Verse 2 says, "And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, and walked in all the way of David his father, and turned not aside to the right hand or to the left." Now it's interesting, all through the Old Testament in various places, and when God gives commands and things, he says, turn not aside to the right or to the left. It's something we've got to watch for. We think, well, you know, if I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to go this direction. I'm going to get too strict, or I'm going to bind these things, even though I know the Bible doesn't say, but I'm going to bind it, and I want to make sure. But see, the Bible tells us that going off too far in either direction is wrong. We've got to stay on the path. We don't need to go off to the right or to the left too far in either direction. And that's what it says about Josiah here. And it says that he did like David, his father. Now, apparently he wasn't as good as Hezekiah. Because it said that Hezekiah was the best, there was none like him afterwards, and none had been like him before. So here's Josiah, though, a good king. And they find the book of law. It had been lost. Remember, Manasseh reigned for 55 years. By the time Manasseh got done reigning, see, he started young. He was only 12. And he reigned until he was 67 when he died. Now you think about that. A lot of the people who grew up during the reign of Manasseh probably didn't even know anything about the true worship of God. They'd grown up with all of these false teachings and false practices, with all of these abominations that it talked about that Manasseh did. Building up all of the altars of Baal and everything. You can read down through there verses 3 and 4. He even built altars to false gods inside the temple in Jerusalem. I mean, this guy, wicked things he did. But the book of law is found. See, it had been lost 55 years. That's two generations of people. Just about. Verse 19. God explains that he is going to send Judah, Jerusalem. He's going to send them away into captivity. Verse 19. Talking to Josiah, he says, "Because your heart was tender and you have humbled yourself before the Lord, when you heard what I spake about this, against this place and against the inhabitants of it, that they should become a desolation and a curse, and hast rent your clothes and wept before me, I also have heard you, says the Lord. Behold, therefore, I will gather you unto your fathers, and you shall be gathered unto your grave in peace, and your eyes shall not see all the evil which I will bring upon this place." And they brought the king word again. So they brought that message back to the king of what God had said. Because he had the tender heart, God was going to destroy it. And even though Josiah was a good king, see, that didn't keep God from doing what he was going to do. He just said, "I'm going to wait till you're gone. I'm going to let you live your life out in peace. But oh, beware." You know, it may be, even in our country today, that there is, you know, it may come to the point where there's only one person that's keeping God from just wiping the United States off the face of the map. That's the way it was here. If it hadn't been for Josiah, God would have wiped them out right then and there, taken them off into captivity then. But because Josiah was the king and had such a tender heart, God said, "I'm not going to do it while you're alive. I'm going to wait till you've died, you've been buried, and then I'm going to do it." It may be, at some point, if there's only one person standing between an entire nation and their destruction, we need to make make sure that if that's the case, that we're those people, we're the people that are doing, that are standing in the place that keeps that from happening. Remember the case of Sodom and Gomorrah when Abraham and God were talking about that? And he said, well, if you find 50 righteous guys, then God wouldn't destroy it for 50. Abraham talked him all the way down to 10. He said, if I can find 10 people in that city that are righteous, I'm going to destroy it. How many towns are there in our world today that if God wanted to, you know, wipe them out because he couldn't find 10 righteous people? He had to wipe Sodom and Gomorrah out. Couldn't find those 10 righteous people he was looking for. Okay? Abraham could have got him down to 5 and he still would have destroyed the city. Couldn't find 5 righteous people in that city. Chapter 23, verses 15 through 18. Put out to the side 1 Kings chapter 13, verses 1 and 2. One of the classes today, this Wednesday night, and I forget now which one of the classes it was, studying about the man of God out of Judah that came and prophesied against Jeroboam. Veronica, was that your class? Yeah. Okay. Studied about that. Rose was teaching them about that lesson. Well, this is where the fulfillment. Remember, he said to Jeroboam, there's going to be somebody that's going to come and going to destroy all these altars that you've built. And going to just take care of this mess that you've made of things. Well, here it is. And it's interesting because back there in 1 Kings 13, now remember this was hundreds of years earlier. Probably in the neighborhood of 300 to 400 years earlier back there in 1 Kings 13 that he talked about this. And if you didn't have that marked down there, you might want to. I think we did mark it when we were there in 1 Kings, in chapter 13. Notice what he says, though. Behold, a child shall be born unto the house of David, Josiah by name. Notice how specific he is? He didn't just say, you know, someday somebody's going to tear this down. Well, that's not prophecy. That's speculation. That's prediction. That's probability. I could look at this building, I could say, you know, someday somebody's going to tear this down. Well, if the world lasts long enough, there's a pretty good chance that's going to happen. Either somebody's going to tear it down, or it may burn down, or, you know, it happens with almost every building that ever has been built. It gets torn down at some point. He could have just said, you know, oh, it's going to happen someday. But he didn't. He said, there's going to be a child born, and his name is Josiah. You know how specific he got. And he told exactly what was going to happen. And then over here in 2 Kings 23:15 through 18, we see that being fulfilled. Moreover, the altar that was at Bethel and the high place which Jeroboam the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin, had made, both that altar and the high place, he broke down and burned the high place and stamped it to small powder and burned the grove. And as Josiah turned himself, he spied the sepulchres that were there in the mouth of the pit, took the bones out of the sepulchres, and burned upon the altar, and polluted it according to the word of the Lord, which the man of God had proclaimed, who proclaimed these words. And then he said, what title is that I see? And the men told him, it's the sepulchre of the man of God, which came from Judah, and proclaimed of these things that would be done against the altar at Bethel. And he said, leave him alone, let no man move his bones. So they let his bones alone with the bones of the prophet that came out of Samaria. So we see the fulfillment there. See, God doesn't work in 30-minute time frames. He works in 300-year time frames, 3,000-year time frames. When he made that promise back in Genesis 3 to Eve about her child and the serpent, didn't fulfill that with Cain or Abel or Seth. Wasn't it really her children? It's way on down the line to Jesus. Some 3,000 to 4,000 years later. Long time off. And yet, that's the way God works. He's looking at the long term. So they say when it comes to investment, that's what we need to prepare for the long term. That's why they tell young people, start investing, making your investments for your retirement while you're young. So it'll have long time to gain what it needs to get. See, God looks for the long term. And long term for Him isn't even a human lifetime. Long-term for Him isn't even a nation's lifetime. Long-term for Him is the whole history of the world. That's what He's looking at. That's what He's going on. Let's move quickly and I'll get these last two chapters. You can mark down verse 31, Jehoahaz. Verse 32 says, he did evil in the sight of the Lord. This is after Josiah. Jehoahaz is his son, but he did evil. And then verse 36, Jehoiakim. Verse 37 says, he did evil. Then chapter 24, we see Jehoiachin. We had Jehoiakim, and now Jehoiachin. And before that, we had Jehoahaz. So there's a lot of similar names there. Verse 9, he did evil in the sight of the Lord. And so then comes the Babylonian captivity. Verse 14, and he carried away all Jerusalem and all the princes and all the mighty men of valor, even 10,000 captives and all the craftsmen and the smiths, none remained, save the poorest sort of the people out of the land. And you thought it was a bad thing to be poor? The poor people were the ones that got to stay at home. All the rich people, all the fancy people, all the big shots, they're gone. Then verse 18, Zedekiah gets put, he wasn't really a king as such, he was put in place by the Babylonian government to be the king, but he didn't get to really be fully king as we would think of a king having ultimate rule. But he did evil, just like all the things Jehoiakim had done. Chapter 25, I want us to notice verse 9. Babylonians come again. Verse 9 says, and he burnt the house of the Lord and the king's house and all the houses of Jerusalem and every great man's house burnt he with fire. Probably the lowest point in Israel, Judah, maybe even some could even say in mankind's history. The lowest point right here. Where the temple, the house of the Lord, where God had established his house in Jerusalem and had said, there shall my name be destroyed. And he lets it happen. He lets it be destroyed. He let his people be carried off into captivity. God's people gone. Or at least so it seems. And at this point, the devil must think, surely I've won now. It's certain. I've destroyed Israel, now I've destroyed Judah, they're all taken off into captivity, and I've even destroyed the temple. What more can I do? I've got it conquered. Satan surely thought he had it. The lowest point in history of God's people at that point. Now later on, we might see another low point, or one that seems even lower in the crucifixion and burial of Christ. What a low point that must have seen. Here's the Savior come to save the world, and he's dead and buried in a tomb. Can't get much lower than that. See, God always manages to pull the victory out. And he will here too. We'll get to see that in books following. But of course we'll have to go through 2 Chronicles and hit some other little tidbits that were missed in here. But we're going to get to see. It's not over. It seems like. We think of the Bible, especially these Old Testament, we think of this as being all boring stuff and all the genealogies. And yes, some of the genealogies are very taxing and difficult to read through sometimes just because of the pronunciation, if nothing else. But we see how important those things are. Because all of those people, those were God's people. All of those people, some of those people, like Hezekiah and Manasseh that we saw tonight, were in the line that was going to bring Christ, that was going to bring the Messiah to the world. These are important things. And there's excitement. You've got battles, and you've got, one nation against another nation. It's just as exciting as anything that's going on in the news right now with our struggle with Iraq. It's just as exhilarating. Now, when I say exciting, exciting isn't always a good thing. Exciting just means, you get the adrenaline pumping. Well, that same thing can happen when an 18-wheeler's barreling down the highway at you and you think you're going to get run over. That still gets there. It's still very exciting. Exciting things. But, see, God didn't make this a book that should bore us. But we have to understand more of it in order to see all the things that are going on, to see the connection between Hezekiah and Manasseh and Christ, to see the connection between the Babylonian captivity and Christ's burial. And there's a connection there. There's a low point when it seems... See, what did Jesus say? Destroy this temple, I'll rebuild it in 3 days. It's just like the Babylonians came in, they destroyed the temple. Well, tell you what, they didn't rebuild that one in 3 days. But Jesus was talking about the temple of his body. See the comparisons there. And there's so much that we can learn, even from those Old Testament stories, and recognize that they're not just stories that are thrown in there for the fun of it. They're there because they're following the storyline to bring Christ. That's the purpose of the whole Bible, is to show us the scheme or the plan for redemption that God had for the world. That's what it's there for. Show us that plan that God had. If you're here tonight and you have a need to respond to the invitation, either in initial obedience to the gospel or as a Christian, you have not lived your life for Him as you should. Perhaps unlike Hezekiah, who had a perfect heart, maybe your heart's far from perfect. Maybe you haven't done that which was right in the sight of the Lord, but like some of those other kings, you've done that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. The good thing about Manasseh, and we'll touch on that a little more in 2 Chronicles, even though he did all those evil things, he repented. God allows us the opportunity to repent of our sins. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.